When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to United Hour, your one-stop shop for all things Manchester United. I'm your host this week, Nick.
And I'm Colin.
Yeah, we are recording on Sunday evening. We had a pretty solid win against Nottingham Forest earlier today. That'll be the main focus of the show today. We will also be talking about Thursday night's game versus Sevilla, which I was at Old Trafford, which all looked to be going really well, but ended very badly. And then we'll look ahead to the second leg of that game against Sevilla and a couple of the league games coming up. Chat a bit about top four. And then the next game coming up again. In fact, it's Brighton in the FA Cup. So yeah, a lot of heavy, heavy schedule we've got coming up there. But look, Colm, let's focus on today's game. Nottingham Forest, third win in the row for us in the league and third clean sheet as well. And it actually comes off the back of a pretty bad run. You know, we'd only got 1 point out of the previous three Premier League games and people are starting to get a bit worried about where we were in the top four and everything like that. But now all of a sudden things are looking pretty rosy, right?
Yeah, they are. Although I would say, you know, a month ago they were looking rosy and it just kind of seems to ebb and flow, this top four race. It seems like there's a few teams there who, it's almost like who doesn't want it as opposed to who does want it at stages. But it definitely looks good at the moment. I'm still confident and think that, you know, if it weren't to pan out, if we weren't to finish top four, I think that's a huge black mark on Erik ten Hag, although he does have sympathy for the current injury, you know, suspension situation. But broadly, all looks good at the moment. I mean, you shouldn't be losing out to Spurs at the very least, you know. But yeah, another a good away performance as well, which has been a big issue lately.
Yeah, definitely. Our home form has been a lot better and our away form has not been going. I mean, I was slightly worried about this game, mostly because of our injury situation. Forest also had a very good home record, are absolutely fighting for their lives at the bottom of the league. I mean, you could see from our squad today that we're down to the kind of bare bones. It's only kind of when you look at the substitutes bench and you see Iqbal, Jurado, Brandon Williams, you know, a blast from the past, kind of a lot of our fans probably forgot that we still own Brandon Williams, so he was still around there.
Painful memories. Yeah.
I don't know. I remember he broke through under Ole and then, I don't know, he's been a bit lost since then. He actually had a good year on loan last year at Norwich, but now this year has been a bit of a write-off for him. But, I mean, our injury list, though, is like really been racking up. I mean, obviously, Rashford and Shaw are already out. Varane and Martinez then kind of limped out midweek over there. McTominay was out. Sabitzer pulls out in the warm-up today.
You love to see it, don't you? Don't you? A warm-up injury always just bodes well.
You know, it's the last thing we needed. And then as well, Malacia, that was a kind of shock to me. You know, I put out kind of my predicted lineups online, but I got, I initially got 10 out of 11. Then it ended up with 9 when Sabitzer limped out as well. But Malacia wasn't expecting. He's then out there. So yeah, our defence in particular was looking kind of, I mean, you wouldn't say threadbare, but you're down to kind of a second string. I mean, all these players are still internationals, but at the same time, you know, they're far from our best 11. I mean, pre-match, how confident were you feeling about it?
Well, I was, to be honest, Nick, pretty confident, you know, leading up to it. And when I saw the team, I really didn't have an issue. You know, I think if you're not beating a team like that, then, you know, the problems are probably bigger than we would want them to be. And that's kind of exactly how it played out. I think it's interesting because essentially we played with like a back four that we'd had like last year, you know, and we've just learned to expect better. We feel like we have better now, so it seems worse than it is. But what you have to remember is that back four has done reasonably well, you know, in previous seasons. Yes, of course, we all knew we needed to upgrade and we have done. And now we kind of expect that upgrade is the level. You know, it's very hard to imagine games without Martinez particularly. We've sort of, you know, been accustomed to playing stretches of games without Varane just with his injury record, but Martinez particularly, you know, is so key to how we play and so key with making sure everything's secure back there. But no, I was pretty happy. I also didn't mind at all Dalot playing left back. You know, there was a bit of chat before kickoff about how that's a a bit of a slap in the face of Malassi, or a real kind of come down. And I really don't see it that way. I really view it the opposite way, that, you know, and we'll get on to it. Obviously, he had a howler against Sevilla, really, in terms of performance, but also in that isolated incident that lets them into the game. And I just think for a young player in his first season at United, there's no need to throw him straight back in when you have Cother otherwise. So it's not to say, oh, you can't be trusted because you made that mistake. We now think you're a crap player. It's just, he makes that mistake. That's kind of bad enough. If he goes out today and has another poor game, it kind of compounds it. And I think you have to be so careful with young players at the start of their career at a new club in a new country. So why not just protect him? You know, it's not a big slight. He's not a starter. It's not a big black mark to say, oh, you're not, you know, you're not good enough anymore. We don't trust you. Just put Dalot in there and let him do a job. And at least it kind of means that when Malassi can come back in a week or two, probably sooner, you know, he's had a bit of a break. He's had a breather and we've won a game.
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, look, Malassi did take a lot of blame in that midweek game, and we will talk more on that Sevilla game later in the show. Generally, I think he's had a pretty good debut season. He's filled in when he needs to. I did say that I thought there was a kind of chance that people thought that Luke Shaw might have been back for this game, and I thought Malassi would definitely have come out then. But yeah, in the end, he's not made it. But look, Dalot steps in. I think he's actually had a good game. And yeah, in the end, he even gets his name on the score sheet. But you look, this game started kind of more, it was quite an open game to start with. You know, the midfield was often getting bypassed. There was kind of chances both end. Maguire was looking kind of nervy at the start. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of focus on that Maguire-Lindelof partnership. And yeah, look, as you say, back in, what, only 2 years ago, that was our main partnership that got us to second in the league. You know, both international players.
Somehow.
Yeah, yeah. Look, yeah, people often like malign some of our like squad players, but a team that was Maguire, Lindelof and McFred in midfield did come second in the Premier League 2 years ago. So yeah, a lot of these, and they're still international players. They're still like solid players over there. It is a step down for sure from Varane, from Martinez. And, you know, the biggest killer for me, never mind the result of that Sevilla, is the fact that Lisandro Martinez is now out for the rest of the season. You know, that is an absolute like blow for
us.
He
might make it back for a final.
I don't think so. No, I think he's out. He's done. You know, metatarsal maybe isn't as bad as some of the things that were talked about before, where Achilles and things were thrown out. And yeah, maybe we should be thankful because, you know, those Achilles injuries, some players never come back from that. They're never the same again. So yeah, that it's a metatarsal, I think, is actually better. But I think he's basically definitely out for the season. Varane, we do not know how long he's out for. We said a few games. We're still waiting for news on Rashford, sure. But yeah, that was the big thing for me, to win despite all those players being out, and to play well, more importantly, right? Yeah. We played well. We had a lot of chances. That's actually the only negative from today, is that we didn't score more goals. I mean, on the last podcast, we'd come off back-to-back wins against Brentford, against Everton, and we were pretty happy. But Oshwin was actually complaining on that show about not taking our chances, about not scoring more goals. You know, again, the XG shows that we were absolutely deserve more goals. We're at like 3.9, basically, versus 0.9 for them. And we've only come out with a kind of 2-0 win, which is similar kind of numbers that we had against Everton, which was also a 2-0 win. I mean, once we start playing these bigger games, FA Cup semi-final coming up, big game against Sevilla, we've got like, you know, 6-pointers in the top four race coming up as well. We can't be missing this many chances, can we?
No, you can't be. And it's not even missing chances, Nick. It's creating good opportunities, but not actually almost resulting in a chance. There's a lot of ball played across the 6-yard box today, and Martial just nowhere in sight. You know, things like that, where you just feel like we could actually create that half chance. And I know that won't necessarily reflect on XG, so that's not even included in those stat lines. But there's a lot of half chances and opportunities where we'll never score a goal because the person isn't where they need to be. But Erik ten Hag actually came out, when he came out for his little pitch side chat with the boys on the Sky coverage, they sort of said, look, are you happy with it? He said, well, I am, but I really wanted a lot more goals. I think in games like this, you should be going on scoring 3 or 4. You know, we had the chances, we should be putting those away. And they sort of said, well, you know, 2-0's grand. He's like, yeah, it is grand. But then when you play someone where you only get 3 chances, not 8 chances, you have to take them. So if you don't take them in this game, you know, you don't learn to put them away. You don't become clinical. And it's not in this game where it hurts you because you have an abundance of chances. It's in the tighter games where you get less chances. And I think that's absolutely spot on. And I did hear the last pod and I agree with Ashwin. I think Rashford has sort of slowed, you know, in recent weeks. I think the games have gotten too consistent, you know, just too many games, little niggly injuries, and now he's out, obviously. And I think the rest would probably be good. I don't know, he might actually get that much rest. He might feature at the weekend, midweek. But it's just like if it's not going to be him, it's not going to be anybody. You know, Bruno isn't really scoring. He's playing a little bit deeper. I mean, Sabitzer has just found his form, I think, after showing really encouraging signs over recent weeks in terms of his willingness to take shots on. But other than that, you know, there's not really goals. Sancho doesn't look like he's ever going to score. Anthony has been really good, but not really super threatening or super productive. So it's just important that we do get goals from different areas, and that's what happened today.
No, yeah, it was nice. And look, the first goal does come from Anthony. Bruno was man of the match today. He had an outstanding game and has been very good for the last few matches. After getting a little bit of stick in a bit of run, you know, that run where we weren't picking up the results, had lost a couple of games, drew against Southampton. He did get a bit of stick in that run. And yeah, he's really turned it around there. It is interesting, like, he's been shifted around a lot this season, you know, from 8 to 10 to wide. All over he's playing. And I actually really like him when he's playing this slightly kind of deeper role. I almost think he's more suited to it. He's always been the number 10 for us. You know, under Ole, he played number 10 every single week. And that was all he was doing week in, week out. And, you know, we always had that kind of complaint that sometimes he's going for the Hollywood balls. Sometimes he's not making the right decisions. But he's still kind of delivered enough goals, enough assists to make it worthwhile. He's taking, you know, sometimes a bit more of a defensive role, being that captain, doing some of the hard work, but still doing some amazing passing, you know, especially that first goal. It's an absolutely outstanding pass from him. First time, kind of on the turn, into Martial. Martial takes the shot. It's a good save. And then, yeah, Anthony's there for the rebound. But yeah, it's all about Bruno, really, in that goal.
Yeah, I mean, to not take a touch before playing the pass is what separates him from, you know, quite a lot of attacking players there. And it's what it needs because Martial only has that, you know, 1 second gap before the defenders are recovering. And it's what allows him to be immediately set away. And you know, a decent effort from Martial across the keeper, which is what allows it to get tapped into the path of Anthony. I think, like, I can't remember which game it was. It was the first game Bruno played deeper, and Sabitzer almost played a 10. I just think huge credit to Erik ten Hag, because I think that's such a good shout, and it's not necessarily obvious. You know, you would immediately think that Sabitzer's probably the more suited to being an 8 out of the two of them, and that, you know, Bruno is more valuable to have at the 10. Obviously, Bruno, I think, there was a stat the other day that since he came to United, only him and Messi have over 50 goals and 50 assists in that time, and Bruno has like 50 and 60. And so the only two players in top European football who have both 50 goals and 50 assists since Bruno came to United, basically. I mean, that is just crazy levels of production. And so you'd be very fearful of moving him away from the 10, but I agree. And he's so defensively decent. His engine is so good that he suits the 8, like, you know, seamlessly, no problem. And I do agree. I think his help in the kind of middle build-up, as opposed to just being at the top of the pitch, is kind of just as valuable as his goals and assists. And I do think, you know, over the last, well, this season altogether, but particularly lately, he hasn't really been featuring in goals and assists, but he's been playing brilliantly. So it really doesn't matter. And again, today, I think he was on a different level. He was exceptional.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I had a look at the kind of average position chart, which is something I kind of like to look at. Like I say, it's interesting to see, you know, midweek, Sabitzer was there, Bruno was there. Today, we went back to Bruno and Eriksen. And earlier in the season, of course, Eriksen was in a kind of two-man midfield with Casemiro, and Bruno was pushed a lot on. I mean, today, Eriksen and Bruno were around the kind of same position, Casemiro doing all the kind of holding work. So it kind of frees those two up to push forward as they can. And yeah, they can both take it in turns to drop in if need be, if the other team are on the attack. But I think that is the big thing. now that we've got Casemiro back after his second kind of enforced rest, it does allow the likes of Bruno, the likes of Eriksen, the likes of Sabitzer midweek to push on and really like make those things happen in the centre of the pitch for our attacking players to get on the end of it. And yeah, it's great. You know, it's not the same as we used to be with kind of two-man midfield. It's really like one holding player, which is Casemiro, and the other two are given license to go back and forth as need be. And I think this might be a bit of a kind of, you know, more changing formation under Ten Hag, where we just have one sitting midfielder, and it's more like a kind of 4-1-2, whereas before, you know, in the Bas days, we were always like 4-2 and 1-3-1 going from there. But yeah, Casemiro can do all that kind of work to protect our defence, you know, especially important in days like today when we've got Maguire and Lindelof there.
Yeah, and also, like, it allows you... So, as you said, the game was pretty open today, but it didn't feel as bad as it has recently sometimes. You know, there's a kind of open game when you're playing McTominay and Fred, and it's a basketball game, and you just feel like we have no control, you know, and we're not necessarily going to come out on the right end of it. But with those three, you feel like we will hurt teams more than they will hurt us, and that we will control it on the other hand. And that's even with that makeshift back four, you still had that feeling. I mean, they were mainly causing us concerns from corners and set pieces and long throw-ins. You know, it wasn't really from the transition too often, except probably that one time that Dalot got caught and played, took that bad touch. But I saw another one today that when Casemiro, Eriksen and Bruno have started, they've started something like 17 games together. We've won 15 of them. You know, like that midfield, I am so happy with as a three. I think it has brilliant balance. I think they're all top players. The only issue is you're going to have to replace Casemiro and Eriksen, you know, in the next year, probably, you know, which is a real shame because they're all so good. I love that midfield three. I think it's really, really top.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like you say, you know, Sabitzer was supposed to start this game, but to have Eriksen back...
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. Obviously, Eriksen came on midweek and looked a bit rusty.
Which is normal. And, you know, he's been out. Yeah, I can't remember how long he's been out, but it's been a while.
Yeah, 100% normal. But I still kind of expected him to start today just because of, you know, other people missing and stuff like that. And not necessarily, you know... Sabitzer's been great. He's in good form. He scored two goals, so keep him in there. You know, I have no issue with that. And obviously, I think they just want to be careful with players. But I mean, Eriksen was brilliant today as well. Probably better than Sabitzer might have been, you know. So it could have been a different game.
No, it is great to have him back. And like I say, we've lost a lot of players. But to get back Eriksen, Casemiro back from suspension, and Martial as well. I mean, Ten Hag still isn't trusting him to play 90 minutes. You know, he started the last couple of games, been subbed out. There is the only slight issue with Martial is that, and you said it, you know, there's a few balls played across the six-yard box and there was nobody there to get on the end of them. And, you know, again, if you look in our average position charts, Martial is actually, his average position is no further forward than Eriksen or Bruno. Our two most forward players are Sancho and Antony in the wide areas. And you remember in those days under Ole where he said, look, we're lacking that forward who's ready to, what did he say, break his nose to get into the six-yard
box.
Break
his nose to score the goal, yeah.
So, yeah, we're still lacking that kind of guy, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you are lacking that kind of guy, but it's a trade-off. You know, very rarely will you ever find a number nine who can do everything. I mean, Kane comes to mind. He's the kind of player who can drop in and swish the ball about and play through balls and length of play and then will absolutely... you know, score the goals in the box. But even now, he probably does more of the former than the latter, truly. So it's very rare to get someone who'll do all that. Then you have a Haaland who just wants to, you know, just go through on goal and get tap-ins and headers and stuff like that. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'd take that with the season he's having. But we know Martial's a nine is a kind of almost a false nine, a playmaking striker. He wants to drop in and then he'll just chill out there. You know, he wants to be involved in the build-up. He wants to be exchanging passes. And, like, there's a lot of benefit in that because, as everyone will have noticed, particularly in contrast to Wout Weghorst, number nine, we are so much more fluid. You know, the I think the slickness and the quality of football and the easiness on the eye just 100% goes up a level with him. And he works hard. You know, he wins the ball back with a high press for his own, well, not his goal, for the one that Antony taps in off his shot, you know. So, like, there's loads of good stuff there. I thought he played pretty well today, probably better midweek, but still decent. But yes, there's always that element. I think if you had two wide forwards who were both, you know, really coming inside, really making runs in behind and really getting on the end of things like Anthony did for his goal, perhaps, you know, Rashford over Sancho, and that would compensate somewhat for Martial maybe not just having that fox in the box, but you kind of then need goals from all three, I think, because I don't think Martial's ever going to be like a 30 goal a season. I mean, if you could even keep him fit, do you know what I mean? I think if he was fitting 100% for the whole season, I still don't think he'd score that many goals. But, you know, I just think we'll see what happens in the summer with the number nine. Martial can lure you in, you know, but we've been burned many's a time on that one.
Yeah, look, listen, for me, if Martial is fit, I have absolutely no doubt about his quality. He's shown it time and time again. He did have that 1 year under Ollie. Did he score 25? He was definitely 20-something. That was his kind of best year. You know, that was the year where Ollie really tried to convert him from more of a wide player to a centre-forward. But he's still, like I say, still wanting to drop in a bit more, still wanting to get involved in the play, and does a great job of that. But then when the ball's going in the box, we haven't got anybody there, and that is the slight problem. So it's, you know, definitely going to be top of the list as we go into the summer, is our striker situation. And of course, yeah, we'll talk about that more in the later parts of the season. But yeah, look, we dominated this game. We absolutely deserve to win it. You know, possession, we're at 68%. We got 22 shots versus 6 for them. They didn't even have a shot on target. And as I said, now 3 games in a row, we've kept clean sheets, which is absolutely brilliant. David
Both
De Gea,
clean sheets in the league.
Yeah, David De Gea at the moment is leading the Golden Gloves. So yeah, absolutely brilliant. And like I said, today to do it with Maguire and Lindelof rather than our first choice is really
Lindelof,
great as well.
I thought was excellent. And I think he is consistently, I mean, he's a great number three, I think. I really, really do. Maguire, you know, very shaky for the first 15 minutes. You know, obviously got the book in, could easily have given away a penalty, doing a lot of grappling, you know, with players, which I never like to see from a centre-back. You know, you don't really see that with Varane, you don't see it with Martinez, you certainly don't see it with Lindelof. I always think it's kind of a sign that the centre-back's nervy and that they're not having it their own way, basically. When players are trying to go around you and you're grabbing at them, or when it's a corner situation and you're really, really grabbing, that makes me very, very nervous, because I don't think it's like a sign of really top-quality defending, to be honest. Having said that, he was good on the ball, I thought. He was good stepping out. The big switches of play, you know, he definitely, I mean, Ten Hag spoke after about this as well to say, you know, I think one of the questions was, you know, we always see Maguire and Lindelof, but in the opposite position, you know, swapped.
Yeah.
Which is where the voice played. And Ten Hag straight away said, not under me, you haven't, because I don't think that makes any sense. It places Maguire in an uncomfortable position every time he has the ball. He's not able to play his real proper game. And I think you've noticed that. I mean, the last few games, on the right-hand side, with him stepping out and really launching crossfield balls to, you know, be it Rashford, be it Shaw, be it, you know, whoever, Malassia, whoever's on that side. Like, he's very strong at that. He's very good at stepping out. And even today, you know, those times where he's stepping right up to their 18-yard box to kind of create space and then laying it off. That's all good. It's just the defending. He looks nervous and he's not a captain. He's not our captain by a stretch. I mean, he's on too much per week, and he's too expensive to be a third choice centre back. We might even buy a centre back, and he becomes, I mean, I would honestly put Lindelof ahead of him at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, he seems to be third choice. I mean, Lindelof has not played
as much. But I think that's just like I do think that's a bit of a, well, he is the captain, like, how embarrassing can we make this kind of thing? Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's, I don't want to say a pity choice, but I think it's a little bit of that.
Yeah, Ten Hag has dealt with it pretty well. But yeah, it's definitely going to be something to deal with in the summer. We will take a quick break there, come back and finish talking about this game, and then move on to the Sevilla match. All right, back for part two of the podcast. Look, as we said, we absolutely deserve to win this game. We dominated possession, dominated the chances. Only shame was not getting a few more goals. I mean, there was chances for Sancho. Bruno was very unlucky not to get on the score sheet. Oh. I mean, Navas played some amazing saves, to be fair. And it was the same in Everton game.
It was one of those games. Yeah. Yeah, Pickford, yeah. Although, in both those, a lot of them, like, they are good saves, but they're also, there's shots that just, like, if you hit that a little bit better, you probably would have scored. Do you know what I mean? Now, you can't say that for Bruno's that you're talking about, where Navas, Navas pushes it onto the post or the bar, or a combination of both. But a lot of them, you know, he was busy, put it that way. He was very busy.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, look, finally we did break the deadlock to get that second goal. I mean, I was a bit worried, especially after that Sevilla game where, you know, we absolutely dominated and then ended up coming out 2-2, which, you know, we'll get on to. But, you know, Forest had the odd kind of like run on the break and everything. And as we went longer without getting that second goal, I started getting a bit, oh, we're not going to have a repeat of that, are we? But yeah, finally it did come. And it came from a kind of unexpected source. Diego Dalo getting his first ever Premier League goal. But it was actually a lovely finish from him, wasn't it?
Great take, great finish. I think the run's the best part of it. You know, I mean, it's a great team goal in general. Dalo actually starts it. And then Anthony, thought Anthony was really, really good today and has been in recent weeks. Just I'm becoming a bigger and bigger fan of his. After, you know, I think a lot of us were maybe a bit sort of underwhelmed at points of the season. Or just a little bit confused as to exactly what we'd bought. But he's kind of, you know, beats three or four players, kind of doing that sideways along the 18-yard thing. And then Dalo just makes a great run. And I was just watching it thinking, like, the best teams, the reason why they're so good is because of the runs. It's runs from deep, runs that the other team aren't expecting, that they can't track. And, I mean, your left back making that run. Dalo was playing in the centre of the park for most of the game, really. You know, it was a really kind of cool thing the fullbacks were doing, and that was just the icing on the cake. Great team goal, great run, great touch, great finish, and it just put it to bed. I mean, I already thought they were pretty deflated from the first goal, and they never really, you know, caused too many hurry moments at 1-0, but as you say, it's fragile enough. That just killed the game, absolutely killed the game, and it was great because, you know, as you say, from midweek there was kind of maybe some not so good feelings at 1-0.
Yeah, we did need that second goal for sure. I mean, Forest are not that great. I do think they will be one of the three to go down, even though, you know, this season's relegation battle is absolutely crazy. You know, so many teams are still fighting in there. Nobody's definitely down. You know, the likes of Bournemouth, who I, to be honest, would have also put in the teams that were going down are kind of fighting and they're still going. But I do think Forest ultimately will be one of those who don't make it. And, you know, they've had a kind of crazy transfer windows where they've just bought in player after player.
Yeah.
But Jesse Lingard still doesn't really manage to get a game. He did get a five-minute cameo at the end, but that's definitely not been a successful move for him, has it?
No, not at all. And like, you know, that's a bummer for him, but it's not surprising to me. But really, broadly, I'm not a fan of their process there, you know? I mean, there's some good buys. I mean, you could say Navas, the Atletico defender, whose name is escaping me. Gibbs White, definitely a good buy. But you can't buy, like, 27 players. And, you know, I think it just shows. I just think they look like what you would expect a team that does that to look like. They just don't look settled. They don't look like they know what they're doing. And I also kind of expect them to go down because they look like they don't have a lot of fight. And as you said, Bournemouth, I mean, this weekend, there's other teams who are kind of scrapping a bit and showing signs of form. I really don't see it. Also, I don't really care. But yeah, not impressive.
Yeah. But, you know, most importantly, that Bournemouth result, whatever, for us, it's been a great weekend. Tottenham losing, Newcastle losing. And yeah, you know, us winning puts us very solidly now into third place, a bit of daylight between the teams around us. As I said, you know, a few weeks ago, all of a sudden, we were getting worried about our top four. But, you know, you said exactly that. Like 2 months ago, we thought we were comfortable. And then you get a kind of couple of weeks where...
We had a title race 2 months ago.
Yeah, it's true. I actually never said that. I've said it in past seasons. I have said it in past seasons. And nobody, you know, we had debate about that. This season, I didn't. I remember people talking about it. It was just before, we played at Arsenal.
I remember a podcast where me and Emma both agreed that we were in a title race. And I stand over it. We were, obviously, for a week. But also, Nick, you know, it'll turn again. I just think every team will slip up now. I don't think Newcastle will be faultless to the end of the year. I absolutely don't think Spurs or Liverpool or anyone else will be faultless. Brighton or Villa, I don't think are, you know, too much to worry about. Having said that, we have a tough run of fixtures in the league, you know, with, you know, cup competitions either side. So it could, you know, in 2 weeks' time, we could be again feeling frail. So I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't say this is it now. I think, you know, we should finish top four, but there will be points again. I'm sure we drop points and everyone goes, but I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, I think so too. Now I'm feeling pretty confident. You know, like I said, I know we did a pod a few weeks ago and also had a similarish chat. And I said, look, I do think Ten Hag can sort this out. And especially now when you see what he does when this player's missing and we still keep rolling on, you know, it's not that much of a problem. You know, if we look at our fixture list, though, it's going to be absolutely crazy what's coming up. Brighton in the semi-final in the FA Cup, and then we've got Tottenham, Aston Villa and Brighton again in the league all in a row. And, you know, all those teams are in around that kind of European places. You know, Villa have all of a sudden shown up with some crazy form under Unai.
Six pointers.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of good. You know, it's almost like being in a relegation battle. We're playing teams that are, you know, going for the same stuff we're going in. That's probably, you know, a bit generous to Villa. Not really to Brighton. I mean, I'm not looking forward to playing Brighton twice at all, I have to say. Nor Villa, really. They're one of the form teams in the league since Unai Emery came in. And I think when he came in, there was the first bounce against us where they won, wasn't it? So hopefully we'll extract a bit of revenge. But, you know, we need players back really to be able to cope with that. But it's still good. I think good problems to have. Also, like, with Sevilla here and the FA Cup semi-final, I mean, we're possibly going to play the absolute maximum amount of games you can play in a calendar year, unless you have to go through Europa qualifying, I think. You know, if we get to the two finals of the Europa and the FA Cup, having won the League Cup, I think we'll play 65 games with a squad that at the moment, or at the start of the year, was not set out for that, not built for that. And I think it's such credit to Erik ten Hag in his first season. I think it's unbelievable. So people might get underwhelmed if we limp to a fourth finish. I think that really misses the point on how well we have shown we can, you know, compete on every front. And I think that is hugely encouraging if we do get into the Champions League and if we do strengthen the squad a little bit in the summer, to say that, well, look, not only are we trying to be regular Champions League entrants every single year, but also we can actually cope with all these competitions all the time. I think it's really, really impressive and something that shouldn't be forgotten when it does get really a bit tight and a bit tired looking and a bit filled with injuries and suspensions and difficult games, because you'd rather be in the competitions than not at the end of the day. And even if we don't win them or we don't even get into the finals, I still think it's credit to the team to have managed that, because we have played three games a week, you know, for the longest time now, and with a World Cup in the middle. And there's not really many other teams that are playing that many games, probably only City, and we've probably played more.
Listen, since the World Cup, I've been banging on about fixture overload, lack of rotation. It's going to come and bite us in the arse. I do think that our amount of kind of injuries is testament to the amount of games players have played. You know, it is no coincidence that we get to this part of the season and players like, I say, Rashford, like Shaw, who we know have had injury issues in the past, Varane as well. I mean, Martinez has rolled on very well this season, but, you know, you see him limping out with nobody anywhere near him, and you know that's going to be a bad injury. And yeah, I think that is a major problem. But, you know, today Ten Hag got them going. He doesn't ever moan about it either, which is a cool thing. He doesn't come out moaning about his players out, whatever, which we have seen past managers do. He just says, listen, doesn't matter, this is our squad, we will deal with it. And yeah, deal with it he does. So, as I said, let's wait till the end of the season. But I've said already that if we get top four and having won the League Cup, that for me is already a brilliant season. You know, whatever else comes from that will be great. That we are in the FA Cup semi-final is brilliant. That we are rolling on in the Europa League is brilliant as well. But yeah, we will see where it goes from there. But yeah, top four is still the thing that we really need to kind of solidify and make sure it happens. I mean, it's been a constant debate. I mean, before we start talking about that Sevilla game, we have always talked about which is more important, FA Cup, Europa League. You know, we do now have these games coming back to back. Thursday night, we will have the second leg against Sevilla. And then on the weekend, we have Wembley FA Cup semi-final with Brighton. I mean, there is a poll at the moment on redcafe.net. Europa League at the moment has got 59% versus 41% for the FA Cup. I know I've asked everybody who's come on this show recently, you, Hushwin, Jamie, Imran, I think pretty much everybody went for the Europa League at the time. Are you still sticking with that if you had to choose one?
Out of those two, 100%. Yeah, 100%. If it's out of those two in the top four, you know, probably top four, because I just couldn't. As much as someone could say, oh, if we win the Europa, we get Champions League football, so why not? Why would you not want the trophy as well? For me, losing top four to like Newcastle and Spurs is unconscionable. I can't have that. I cannot have that. That's not what a top club would do in this situation. I can't have it. We are better than both those clubs. Newcastle are doing very well. Spurs are a joke. We're better than both of them. So I really, third for me is, you know, even if we were to finish fourth, I'd be quite disappointed. So that's what I would say about that. Between the FA Cup and the Europa, the only slight thing, Nick, is if we're beating City in the final of the FA Cup versus beating, you know, Roma or whoever in the Europa, I'd be inclined to say the FA Cup. But if it was just, you know, take the opponents out of it, would you rather win the FA Cup or the Europa? Europa every day of the week. Every day of the week. Even if we hadn't won the League Cup, I would value a European trophy over a domestic cup trophy.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Normally, I would pick the Europa League every time for that Champions League place.
However, if we beat City 3-0 in the FA Cup final and finish third, my goodness, I'd be happy and I wouldn't care what happened in Europa.
Yeah, no, at the moment, that FA Cup, because City are in it, because there's a potential treble on the cards for them, takes a much bigger importance all of a sudden. And that's why, I would.
A very decent chance at a treble, to be honest.
They have. And, you know, we've been worried about these things before, and thankfully they haven't happened. We were worried last year about Liverpool. We're talking about a potential quadruple, and thankfully they ended up with, you know, the two kind of minor cups that it went through, and it didn't happen. So, yeah, we have had these worries before. But, yeah, City are motoring on. I mean, also, yeah, there is a big poll at the moment on Red Cafe again about who do you want to win the league, Arsenal or Manchester City? And I'm actually pretty shocked about the amount of people who say they would prefer Manchester City to win the league. For me, like, it's an absolute no-brainer. It has to be Arsenal. The big thing for me is that City are going for that three in the row. At the moment, and Alex Ferguson are the only manager, the only team who've won three Premier League titles in a row. Manchester City are going for that again this time. The only silver lining of that Scouse one Premier League win, let's just remember, one Premier League win. Liverpool are in the same boat as Leicester City, as Blackburn Rovers, which I always like to remind my few Liverpool, I wouldn't say acquaintances of. But that was the only silver lining when they won that one league. They stopped City getting through though. So we've still got that. I can't believe that there's Manchester United fans out there who would prefer Manchester City to win the league. I mean, all right, maybe if you live in North London and you're surrounded by a load of Arsenal fans, okay, maybe there's some kind of exception over there. But yeah.
I don't know. It's funny. I sort of go back and forth with it. I sort of look at it and think, Arsenal, such a good story there. You know, I like Arteta. You know, I like the documentary. I like a handful of their players. I like that they've just gone from being rubbish to being very good very quickly. Like, they're genuinely a very good Premier League team. Is it sustainable? Don't know. But they've been really good this year. They play very good football and they don't have the best squad and they're really, you know, almost playing above themselves. So for me, that's the kind of team you always want to see beat City, you know, or anyone really, because City's the complete opposite. They just go out and buy all the best players and have the best manager in the world and, you know, good for them. So and then obviously to your points, lots of historical, you know, bragging reasons why you wouldn't want City. Also, like, aside from like, you know, early Premier League days, City are obviously a bigger rival to us, both geographically and currently, than Arsenal, you know? So, like, you know, there's obviously the Wenger, Fergie, Vieira, Keane, all that good stuff, being the two big English teams before the kind of the boom of football in England. But, like, it's just no comparison. And yet, there's occasions where I kind of just want City to win it. Because with City, you can just go, aye, but they just bought Haaland, he scored 74 goals. Do you know what I mean? It's meaningless. They just have Guardiola and they pay all their players double wages and they just break FFP and they're under investigation and, you know, it's whatever. And you can kind of just like, ugh, it's just City. Who even cares? Whereas Arsenal, it's like, that could have been us. Like, why is it them and not us? Like last season with Ole Arteta, it was always like either of these two teams could get it together. They're playing Granit Xhaka and Thomas Partey in centre midfield. Why are they so good? Why are they winning the league? Why are they going to hit 90 points? And why are we nowhere near? Like, I think our squad's better than theirs. That might be bias, but I pretty much think our squad's better than theirs. Why? Like, why? Why are they winning the league? And they're and that, you know, it's easier to swallow a City in a way. But I agree with you. I mean, if it was hand on heart, I would want Arsenal to win.
I do get that. I do get that, what some people are saying. I mean, I actually, funnily enough, I kind of have two different hats on because obviously I'm Manchester born and raised. I mean, part my family is kind of...
You're going to tell me Arsenal or your second team?
Well, I was going to say, like, I live in London now, so I'm actually surrounded by a lot of Arsenal fans, and Arsenal fans are pretty annoying.
No, that is a big part of it as well. People also like meme culture and, you know, fan channels and things like that.
Yeah,
people
exactly.
People just hate Arsenal.
you know, there's,
there's really no City fan channels to speak of, so there's no one to get annoyed at. Do you know what I mean? There's no City fans to speak of, so, you know, that's another reason.
There is part of that, but as I say, at the same time, I do come from Manchester. My family is actually quite split. There's family members of mine who are Manchester City fans. I mean, none of them are actually that kind of bragging style. They don't kind of go on about it that much, and it's because
guilt. Like, that's guilt, man.
Yeah, I think it maybe is part of that. It's also partly because we've all kind of grown up. They also know that if they start going down that road, I'm going to say, "Well, have you won a treble? Have you done this? Have you done that? When have you won the Champions League?" So they kind of don't even want to start going down that road. So they just kind of, you know, roll on as they are, happy that they're at least in contention. Whereas, you know, a few years ago, they were playing with Macclesfield Town in League Two or something like that. So, yeah, don't hear that much from them. But, yeah, I have these kind of two sides over there. But, yeah, I will pick Arsenal every time. And my main reason is that three in the row record that we've still got that I still want to protect. And also part of what you said, that Arsenal are a club that have at least built this properly, have done it without breaking FFP rules and that kind of thing. And I kind of think, you know, that is a way to go forward. But yeah, these polls are always interesting. But yeah, the Europa League FA Cup one, coming back to, is one I've slightly changed my view on. I would have always gone for Europa League, but now, just to make sure City do not get that treble, I am now going towards the FA Cup. And yeah, we are going to take a break there, come back and talk about those games coming up. And also, yeah, the Sevilla game we had midweek. Back for part three of the podcast and the last part. I mean, look, let's start with that Sevilla game. So last Thursday night, I was at the game. It was actually the first game I'd been to for a couple of months. It started brilliantly. You know, we'd said on the last podcast that Sevilla have been in awful form, really in a bad place. They're on their third manager this season. They're like absolutely nowhere, not going to qualify for Europe. So I did kind of make the point that everything for them now depends on this Europa League. They obviously have a crazy Europa League pedigree. The team have won it most. Their squad is kind of full of these, you know loads of their names. There's a load of kind of Premier League journeymen, whether it's Eric Lamella, whether it's Keylor Navas. Not Keylor Navas, that's who was playing against us in net today. The other one. And then, they've got a couple of the Moroccan guys as well. You know, Morocco are kind of my second international team because I spend a lot of time there work-wise. They've got El Naziri up front, Bono in net. So, yeah, lots of names that you kind of know.
Jesus Navas?
Yeah, that's the one. Jesus that's Navas. The one. Jesus Navas. Manchester City reject, exactly. So,
he actually came on and changed the game, didn't he? He didn't start, did he?
No, I think he was their captain, actually. I think, he was starting over there.
I just didn't notice him. That's how good we were up until the point where we decided that... we weren't.
It was absolute madness. And like, all the goals in this game were right in front of me. You know, I'm in J stand.
All scored by United players.
exactly. And we could...
How does that happen? How do you draw a match where you score four goals?
We could not have had a better start. You know, first goal goes in after just a few minutes. We're 2-0 up like early on. And you just think, when's three coming? When's four coming? I was even thinking by like half time that we can get this tie done today. We can rest people out in Seville. It's going to be brilliant, you know, perfect kind of way to go forward.
Yeah, perfect timing.
And obviously the game just didn't run like that at all. I mean, it's absolutely crazy, really. I mean, Sevilla had a 0.6 XG and managed to come out with two goals. We're at 1.75. Maybe we're slightly lucky to be hitting two. But look, two early goals, two for Sabitzer. You know, this is the game I kind of say... Yeah. He announced himself. I mean, he has had another goal before that. He has been doing pretty well. But this game, he really pushed forward, and to get himself on the score sheet twice really showed what he can do. And, you know, we talked before, kind of mentioned, is this a player that you'd like to see stay here permanently? I don't know where you're on that.
Strong, yes. My only concern is fitness. He's been injured a little bit, and he is he 29?
I'm actually not sure how old he is, but yeah, he's definitely around.
I think
his
he's 29. So that's my only concern, and I don't think it's a huge concern. He certainly doesn't look like someone who is super injury prone. I don't really know how he was at Leipzig and Bayern that way. In terms of performance on the pitch, I mean, there's talk of 15 million, which for me is a no-brainer. You know, we need to sign quite a lot of players this summer, and it's going to be quite difficult with FFP and the takeover, I feel. That it might be a bitterly disappointing summer for Ten Hag and these players and us fans if all that kind of conspires against us and can't be overcome, and if we are fully reliant on selling players. So whilst I would want us to sign another midfielder, I think just in terms of getting a really reliable body in, and I also think he's just growing. Like, I think there's been signs there, and I know a lot of people have been on the fence, like, what does this guy do? Yes, he runs around, he presses, but he's a bit, you know, hectic. Is he just like Fred, but a wee bit different? I think he's really starting to show what he's about. He leaps into the counter. You know, when we win possession, he just wants to feed it forward super quickly, super dynamic, and he's so keen to have a shot, and it's always a pretty good effort. And he's been like stinging the hands of goalies in every single game on the turn, just lashing little quick snapshots, and they've all just kind of found the keeper's hands a little bit, and that's just the way it goes sometimes. And I just feel like it's starting to turn where they're just now finding the corners, and he's getting finishes, and his, you know, his good forward runs are really being picked up, and he's kind of starting to figure out and understand, you know, how the team goes. So I'm really happy. I hope it's nothing major, because I'd like to see him back quite quickly. But I would definitely take him for, I mean, if it's literally going to be 15 to 20 million, I just think sell McTominay for 40, get Sabitzer in for 15 to 20, buy a brilliant young midfielder, Bob Schrunkle.
Yeah, look, if you can get him for that kind of price, that definitely can. I totally agree as well that he has been growing into the team. You know, a few weeks ago, I just said, look, jury's still out on him. He's shown some kind of flashes of what he can do. Still not that sure about where exactly he fits in. But yeah, he has kind of found his place. And, you know, for him even to get the nod as the first choice, you know, all of a sudden we had the choice of Eriksen, of Sabitzer, of Fred, of McTominay. And yeah, Ten Hag went with him. And yeah, for him to get two goals in that game is brilliant. And it does show that, you know, early in his career, he was a bit more of an attacking midfielder. He has kind of moved deeper and deeper as time has gone on. And he was even filling in almost as like a number six for us in a couple of games while Casemiro was out. But yeah, I think that is his best position, is a bit further up the field.
Definitely.
Where he can be making difference in the box, getting assists, getting goals.
Yeah, leading the press and, you know, in shooting range, basically, and where his runs will have effect. I think the deeper you play him, the worse he gets. I wasn't impressed with him at all as a six or a deep eight. You know, he just didn't really, it was kind of like watching McTominay. He was kind of just hiding and everything seemed to be passing him by. And he was the odd little occasion in the transition. We thought, oh, that was good. But really, it was just a lot of nothing, to be honest. And I think as soon as Ten Hag shifted to playing Bruno deeper and Sabitzer further forward, everything got the world better for everyone. So I just think it's about figuring out what he is. I also think he actually started as like an almost inside forward and then sort of went 10 and then started dropping a wee bit deeper. But I don't think he ever really played as a proper centre midfielder. So, yeah, I was really pleased with him. I really like him, you know. I think he's cool.
Yeah, no, he's been doing a good job. Like I say, those kind of injury niggles are just a bit of the worry at the moment. There's been a couple of times already he's been out. We have to see how he rolls on from that. But look, let's go back to the game. It was a really weird game. Mm. At 20 minutes, we were already 2-0 up. You're thinking about when's the next goal coming. We ended up kind of getting to half-time. We saw Harry Maguire comes in for Varane, which wasn't a good sign. And actually, wait, you're right. Jesus Navas came in at half-time. They made that change.
Yeah,
now,
he made a big difference.
They did
he
made make a big that difference. Change at half-time. They made that change at half-time. Navas comes in for Torres. And yeah, those were the two changes. I still thought we were kind of on top, although nowhere near as good as the first half. We were still kind of there.
We just never really got going in the second half. You know, it was just like the game got muggy and it just wasn't like it was stop-starty. There wasn't much happening. And we just looked like we were cruising, but not really trying anymore.
It almost
looked
a little bit like we were settling for kind of 2-0, like we weren't really pushing for that. But I think the point where everything really changed then was he makes a triple substitution at the 60th minute. I think that was a mistake, especially when we'd already made one sub already. Eriksen comes in, Weghorst comes in, Alanga comes in, Fernandez, Martial, Sancho out. I thought that was a bit bizarre, where we're still kind of totally in control of this game, really still feeling like we are going to get goal number three, if not number four. That triple sub, I thought, took all of the momentum out of the game for us. I mean, Ten Hag has subsequently come out and said that the kind of referee had made some kind of, I don't know, saying that maybe Bruno was close to getting a red card. Because, you know, he never substitutes Bruno. And that's the reason he gave for bringing him out. And we know that at the moment he doesn't think Martial can play 90 minutes. So, that's why Weghorst comes out and then he makes Sancho for Alanga as well. But I thought that was the point in the game where things really did start changing. They also then bring in the big, like, Moroccan forward, Youssef En-Nesyri, about 5 minutes later, comes in as well. And then the game started changing a lot, as you say. Navas was making a difference, coming in with balls, hitting the big man in the box. You know, it started becoming dangerous for us. You still felt like we were kind of comfortable, but maybe not going to be going for goal number three, number four, but just going to see this out at kind of 2-0 at least and be kind of happy with that. But, you know, it all changes completely.
It definitely, the triple sub didn't work in any way. You know, none of the players who came on did well. However, it still took two of the freakiest OGs you're ever likely to see for them to be drawing level, you know, in the last 10 minutes. So, you know, I kind of thought it was a little harsh because what did he have to work with? And equally, are we not all saying, look at these fixtures, look at these fixtures, have to rest players. You're 2-0 up, you know, at home. You've looked by far the better team. Yes, it's become a muggy game, but maybe you're thinking, well, then the subs, it gives them a chance to go on fresh legs, get at them and reignite that thing. Who did he have to pick from on the subs? So, you know, the triple sub in itself, you know, it leaves you one sub then after that. Is it five? So who then do you have to pick from? Well, you don't have Garnacho. You know, Sancho probably should be a sub.
Well, he did make the fifth sub was Pelestri came in for Antony.
Then the fifth sub came. So, you know, he did leave himself a sub for injury or whatever, you know, because obviously then you had Martinez and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, even those players that came on shouldn't even be the players that are coming on, you know, in an ideal world if we didn't have so many injuries. So I just think it's a bit harsh. Maybe making them all at the same time, possibly, I don't know. I think the game was very much heading that way in terms of just a mugginess and a little bit of pressure building on us and them growing into it and getting down the flanks. And also, a lot of the issues we were having came from them getting in behind on the flanks, which had nothing to do with the three subs. Really nothing to do with three subs. You know, it came down to the defense. It came down to losing Varane, Martinez, and having two suspect fullbacks, basically. So I don't even, you know, the subs were all an attacking thing and all a midfield thing, how well we can keep the ball. But you still had, correct me if I'm wrong, Casemiro on the pitch. You know, I feel there's enough for him to think, this is safe, we're 2-0 up, good experience pros out there. I'm changing the top half and all I need from these young players or these, you know, B-team players is to go out and kind of run around and we will see this through. And I don't really think that's faulty logic and I don't think that's awful. Even if one of them is Alanga, who, you know, really should never play for United ever again, it still should have been enough. And then the issues were from, you know, a complete Malasia cock-up, you know. But that was a consistent theme, you know. Jesus Navas was getting lots of joy and starting to send balls in, you know, and that was not really anything to do with the three people who'd come on. Yes, you defend as a team, and yes, you can always do more. But for me, we gave up on the game at halftime as an 11, you know, and then they were still able to grow. And I still think at that point, I still think you could play that game 10 times, 100 times, and like 98 times we win that game. You know, the
absolutely. As I said, the XG has them at 0.65. They come out with two goals. I mean, it's absolutely bizarre. They didn't have that many other chances. As you say, Malasia just totally falls asleep. He doesn't realise Navas is there. He thinks he's letting the ball run out of play for a goal kick. But Navas shows up and then it's still...
But even after that mistake,
Deflection that ends up going in.
Ridiculous deflection.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is crazy.
So, Like, it is disappointing. It is super disappointing because it now makes Thursday a really tough time and you don't want to be going to Sevilla and, like, needing a win. I still, and I said this immediately, I mean, our group chat, like, Nick, I thought I was going to go and have to, like, get the police out to Jamie's house. Like, honestly, people really were down about that. And I was like, look, that's not something to get down about. See if we had gone out there and trudged for 90 minutes and drawn 0-0 or, for heaven forbid, you know, lost a goal and then 1-0 and not look good. We looked brilliant for 50 minutes. Like, we were slick as anything. We were putting them to the sword. We scored two goals. And then, like, in true post-Fergie fashion, we conjured up the only conceivable way to draw a game in that situation and executed it perfectly.
It was a madness. I mean, they're a bit of a bogey team for us, aren't they? Sevilla,
oh, they definitely are.
Like, time and time again, they've been a problem for us. Yeah. And yet again,
like, that's not the game to get annoyed about. You get annoyed because it happened, but, like, not, there's nothing to take from that because those own goals are ridiculous. Like, the whole situation is ridiculous. And, like, you know, Imran, Jamie, and all are like, oh, there's no way we beat them next week. I'm like, why? We might not win, but, like, what are we not still favourites to win this tie?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously we're going away. We never had a good record in Spain until this season that we've done, you know,
they're
Barcelona.
Like 15th?
Yeah, we've done, like, teams better than them. Barcelona, Betis. We should
We just give them a football lesson in the first half. Like, they couldn't lay a glove, you know? And the team won't be that different. Do you know what I mean? Yes, now there's injuries. Yes, the defence is different. You know, those are problems, definitely. This is what I said
afterwards. I think Bruno is out, isn't he, as well? Because he gets a yellow card and he's now suspended.
Bruno's suspended and both our centre-backs are missing and Luke Shaw's a doubt and Rashford will probably play really injured. So that's not great. And that's what I said. I could have lost that game and it wouldn't have bothered me as much as losing Martinez and Varane for the rest of the season. That's the issue. That's just luck. That's bad luck. That's injuries. That's playing too many games. So the big disappointment, the big thing to be upset about from the Sevilla game was 100% the issue, the injuries, you know, because they will have an impact on the entire rest of the season, not just the return leg, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, I was absolutely gutted coming out of the ground to come out with 2-2. But then to get the news that Martinez is out for the season was the big killer. Mm. And yeah, we have to still see what happens with Varane. I mean, after that Sevilla, as we said, we're off to Wembley to play Brighton, who are in absolutely great form. You know, Brighton, I don't know where they keep pulling out these players from. I mean, forget about buying their players. We need to go out and buy their recruitment team. That's definitely the place we look at. I saw some other guy today score, some 19-year-old Paraguayan that they found from somewhere who also looks like shit hot. I mean, they're, yeah, outstanding. But yeah, their owner, I think, what's his name, Tony Bloom, is like basically a professional gambler. He's the original kind of Moneyball guy. That is his whole thing. Right. He's a like professional guy finding like these bits of difference, finding like the stats of where to pull. And yeah, it's working brilliant for them. And yeah, fair play to them for the work they're doing. But yeah, we will go out to play them in the FA Cup. As I say again, it is a worry for us because of players we're missing. If we had our full team, I would absolutely expect us to be beating Brighton. Without some of those players, it's going to be a lot more difficult. Although I do think that they've lost a couple of players as well out of injury. So, yeah, we'll see what
I
comes.
I know Evan Ferguson, the Irish superstar,
yeah, also
future
now being
Manchester
slightly
United number
linked with
nine.
Us. Yeah, yeah, he's getting some links with us and maybe a potential number
nine
option.
I would be so happy. I would forego every other. If Martial's fit to the end of the season, I would be more than happy for us just to sign Ferguson for like 60 or 70 million, probably what it would take, maybe more, and bet him in. And not have, you know, maybe the Kane or whoever it is we think we're getting, you know, Osimhen, I don't know. But I would be delighted with that. I think within like 6 months, he'd have taken the spot, which is almost the best way to do it, is to bring a young player in with no pressure. He's not necessarily the nine, but then you kind of quite quickly allow him to take the nine, you know, and I think that's a really good way to introduce a young player. And he's Irish and like that'll just be unreal. I would love that. I was actually really looking forward to seeing him play against us. He probably will be fit when we play them, I think, a week or two later in the league. But yeah, he went off injured in the first half against whoever they just played.
Yeah, they played Chelsea, right?
Yeah, that was it.
So he's
yeah.
come out from there, yeah. I actually haven't Chelsea. Seen that much of him yet. Just more, you know, bits of highlights here and there. I've not seen him play a whole game yet, so we'll be very interested.
He's like... He's like Wayne Rooney and Robin Van Persie combined and a little bit better.
All right, so this is not your Irish bias coming out here at all, is it? But look, he is getting a lot of plaudits, and like I say, Brighton are doing a damn good job of pulling out these young players again and again and again. But look, all right, Sevilla is the next match. Let's see what happens over there. It would be great to roll on in that Europa League. One thing as well, when we talk about that Europa League versus FA Cup, if you win the Europa League, you do go straight into the group stages, whereas if we finish kind of third, fourth, we do have an extra kind of qualification games to play. So yeah, there's that kind of thing there, whereas the FA Cup, we do want to stop City. We do want to go back to Wembley, see how it goes. We will definitely.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, Nick, is by in a week's time, we could be out of both.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's totally possible. And do you know what? That would be disappointing. It obviously depends on how the games go. But like Brighton are no mugs. We've obviously given ourselves a task in Sevilla. You know, again, come to my original point, getting to this position in the season is a positive. And people should hold on to that regardless of what happens. I think we will progress in one of, if not both. But even if we don't, depending on the manner of it, you know, it's still a good news story, generally.
Yeah, absolutely. We will come back for sure after Brighton, probably not after Sevilla. Let's see where we're at, which cups we're still in. No, I've already said myself that if we get top four, and if we've already won a cup, it's already a good season for me. Yeah, what happens in these other cups is just kind of bonus time. See how we roll on from there. I mean, yeah. But yeah, look, what is your prediction for going into these? If you had to pick where we come out off of two kind of a semi-final and a quarter-final, what do you think's up?
I think we beat Sevilla, and I think I couldn't call Brighton. I think there's every chance Brighton beat us.
There is absolutely every chance. Look, they're on damn good form.
But I wouldn't be that bothered if Brighton beat us, because I think Brighton are a really good football team. I don't think they're easy to play against. I think they've given us footballing lessons, you know, enough times over the last two or three seasons to understand that, you know, and that's probably their season as well, you know, really. I know they're kind of pushing on for whatever eight European competitions you can get into these days, but that's really their season is the FA Cup. So, you know, I just wouldn't. You know, and who knows what kind of a squad we'll have at that point. You know, we'll see. But it's the Sevilla one will really disappoint me if we don't go through, because they are not a good team at the moment. Like, we should be beating them, even with these issues. I don't think, you know, I think 9 times out of 10 we should beat that team. So, and, you know, last week gave me nothing to think that that isn't the case. So that one I would be really disappointed. I don't think we're going to lose to Sevilla. I could see us drawing and going out in penalties or something ridiculous. But no, I think we'll win that one. Brighton, oof. I'm not too sure.
All right. We will see when we come back after those games. We haven't even really had a chance to talk about the ownership situation, where there's various things going on. The Glazers are now going into round three of bids.
Glazers, just, you know, the one thing you would always say about them, class act. You know, if there's ever a chance for them to do the right thing for the club, they'll always step up and handle themselves with grace and dignity, and certainly not try and grab every single extra penny that they possibly can. And that's really commendable.
Yeah, look, we know what we're getting with them. It's always been like that. They're here to maximise what they're getting. But, you know, there was celebrations at one point where everybody thought we were finally getting rid of the Glazers. Now it's looking not so sure. Not only did we have Elliott management, who are involved in all sorts of dodgy third world debt and other things, and now we just saw the news that the Carlyle Group, who are another huge international hedge fund, which various kind of shady backgrounds are looking at maybe backing the Glazers. So yeah, you know, some people are saying,
I just love that, Nick, you spend most of your day looking into the backgrounds of all the other bidders for dirt, just to make yourself feel better about your desire for the Qataris.
Well, I have got involved a lot in the debates on Red Cafe about these different ownerships. I do think there was a bit too much negativity about a Qatar bid. I've spent a fair bit of time looking myself who these guys are. As I said, you know, people were questioning about, do they have the money? Is it a state bid? It might well be. You know, these things are up in there. I think people get a bit bogged down in about moral kind of issues as well. You know, to be honest, like, I do understand it. Like, what goes on in some of these countries is not great. There is definitely human rights problems in the country of Qatar. But at the same time, honestly, what's most important to me is what is the best for Manchester United Football Club. And if there's only one owner at the moment who's come out and said, I'm going to invest in the stadium, I'm going to clear the debt, I'm going to back the manager. And at the moment, yeah, that is Sheikh Jassim of Qatar. And if that is the best for Manchester United, then so be it. I mean, part of the problem, though, to be fair, is we don't know all the details. You know, you get a few sound bites from these guys. You also get, like, some news comes out from Carlisle Group, from Elliot. For me, those are the worst-case scenarios, that the Glazers stay in some capacity backed by some kind of American hedge funds. That is the worst case. For me, whether it's Sir Jim Ratcliffe, whether it's Sheikh Jassim, both of those are better options. I still do need to hear more about the details of either of those bids. You know, all we saw were initial kind of statements, and then it's all gone quiet. But yeah, the worst case scenario is how long it all takes. You know, we want to get somebody in place so that they can start dealing with summer transfer windows, start if they want to start changing who's in, you know, Richard Arnold, who's the director of football, things like that, then yeah, we want to get those things done quickly so that we don't have a big mess this summer, basically. I mean, that is the biggest problem, how it all drags on. But yeah, slowly, slowly, it is moving on. We will see what happens. We will try and update
slowly,
it.
Slowly, slowly.
Yeah, a lot.
Catchy monkey.
It is a weird saga. I do as well see a lot of people going, oh, I can't believe how long it's taking. You know, we're not going down the corner shop to buy a bag of groceries or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that just sounds ridiculous, because if anything, it will happen at a ridiculous pace for something of this magnitude. Do you know what I mean? Even with it being dragged out, and, you know, when the Glazers are on their 17th round of bidding, it's still a ridiculous, you know, like, to get it done in like a calendar year is ridiculous. You know, it takes like 6 months to move house.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know exactly. What
I mean? Like, it takes solicitors months just to exchange contracts to move house. Why do you think someone can spend $6 billion on Manchester United and it's going to be done, you know, in 2 months so that you can start, you know, planning your war chest? It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and let's be clear, this is going to be the biggest sports deal in the history of any sports. I mean, there's some big deals out in USA and NFL and everything, but yeah, our deal will be the biggest ever. And yeah, these things don't happen quickly, especially when you have people like Glazers who are trying to maximize every little penny they can have out of it. Maybe there's a couple of those siblings who don't even want to leave, which is the big problem. But yeah, we will keep following it, see what happens over there. At the moment, there's no major news, as we say. They're talking about end of April being some kind of deadline, but all this stuff, like transfer windows, it's all just rumor, speculation. We don't really get the full details of what is going on in the background, but yeah, as it all happens, we will keep reporting on it over here. I think that's probably about it for now from this week. We will, like I say, I think we'll come back after that Brighton semi-final and get updated over there. But yeah, it has been, even that Sevilla has been a bit of a downer in the league. At least we've solidified our kind of top four hopes, back in third place, can kind of worry a little bit less about the league, focus a little bit more on these cups, and see, yeah, if Erik ten Hag can put a second piece of silverware in the trophy cabinet this season, then yeah, that is going to be absolutely outstanding. So yeah, fingers crossed for that, and we will be back next week. Good night from me.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to United Hour. Remember to follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at United_Hour. Please take the time to leave a 5-star review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. United Hour is brought to you by the Sports Social Network, and our theme song is by Ancient Feelings. To get in touch, please email unitedhour@gmail.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.